From the Wood Stove House in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, I'm Jason Mundock, and this is Around the Wood Stove. Today on the program, we're going to go back in time to 3 years ago on March 5th, 2010. That's the date when we released the very first episode of Around the Wood Stove featuring Jason Wilbur and Ryan Kaufman. Okay, I'll admit it, it was a little flat at times.
I'm Jason Mundock, and this is Around the Wood Stove. Our purpose is to encourage the arts, the ones that live in and around Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and also the arts from elsewhere that are the result of Lancaster or that Lancaster should simply know about. This is a first episode.
Coming up on this third anniversary episode of the program, we're going back in time to Around the Wood Stove number one, and I'll share a little bit of the backstory on how the podcast got started in the first place. But it's not all about the past. We're also going to hear from Barry Kornhauser with our monthly Wear Center update. And first, of course, we need to find out what's happening around the wood stove. Our friends at Creative Works of Lancaster are presenting a staged reading of Heinrich Ibsen's Enemy of the People on Thursday, March 7th at the Congregation Shalom Shemayim in Lancaster. That's at 75 East James Street. The show starts at 7:30 and is free and open to the public. And immediately following the performance will be a panel discussion drawing parallels between the show's themes and the current fracking debate happening here in Pennsylvania. It's Enemy of the People from our friends at Creative Works of Lancaster, Thursday, March 7th. Check out Skirtin' the Curtain with Joanne Underhill on last week's episode for more about this show and other theater events happening in Lancaster this month. On Saturday, March 9th, Live from the Cellar presents Jake Lewis, Dave LaFever, and Thomas Rue. This is the first stop on a 15-day tour into the Deep South for the three Central Pennsylvania songwriters, and Jake Lewis will be introducing his newly formed backing band, The Clergy, to Lancaster audiences. Seats are limited for this house concert event, so visit the show post on today's episode to link up and make your reservations today. It's Jake Lewis, Dave LaFever, and Thomas Rue live from the Cellar on Saturday, March 9th. It's time once again for our monthly update about what's happening at the Wear Center, the premier visual and performing arts center at Millersville University, right here in the heart of downtown Lancaster City. This month we welcome Barry Kornhauser, manager of Millersville's Family Arts Collaborative Initiative. It's live at the Wear Center on Around the Wood Stove. Thanks, Barry, for taking a few minutes to talk about things that are coming up at the Wear Center. You know, it's just month after month, it's jam-packed. And Harvey and I will sit down and we'll chat about these things that are coming up, and he'll highlight three or four events, and then I'll see all these other great events, and I'm like, boy, if we only had a half hour. What do you have picked out for March?
Well, it's like you're saying, it's almost hard to choose, and I'm just trying to find a good variety of stuff, and it is, there's so much. So at any rate, there's just almost too much to choose from, you know, something going on every day. And again, the variety is pretty impressive, everything from a Latino Arts Festival to an art exhibition of Lancaster County young artists with just really remarkable two-dimensional, three-dimensional work.
Yeah, I saw that as I was coming in, and a question about that show is, it's going to be up all month.
Yep.
When can people come and take a
look? Anytime the building's open, and it's open lots. So, yeah, it's just out there, and people are welcome to wander through it all. It's really, really quite special. There's going to be the Bach Choir of Bethlehem, a very famous performance group doing the Elijah, and they're actually going to be working with one of the choirs at Millersville, the Keystone Choir, I believe it is. Local dance companies are also going to sort of a festival called Steps in Time on the 10th of March. The day after that, you know, there's a film series here, and there are movies you don't see anywhere else in this county, and so there'll be one called A Late Quartet, which is very interesting.
That's on the 11th?
On the 11th of March, right, at 5 and 7:30. All the movies are shown at 5 and 7:30, and the facility here is great. It's just a great movie theater. That's a program that's growing in leaps and bounds, too.
I'm seeing a lot about it and hearing a lot about it. What's the ticket price for the
film?
You
know, I think it's $6. It may be. And, you know, recently they just did, this is really fun, they aired both the Academy Awards animated shorts and the live shorts, and people got to vote, and it was interesting to see how Lancaster voted, and then the Academy voted a little bit later on. I want to say I picked both of them correctly. Okay, I picked Paper Man for animated, and I picked Curfew for live short. I'm ready for Hollywood. There's also going to be
Vegas.
Oh yeah, there's even better. The 15th is going to have a night of comedy for comics performing here.
Are those regional or national comics?
National. And that's the thing about it. Again, I mean, just talk about the diversity of program from Bach to, you know, stand-up. I mean, it goes everywhere. And then end of the month, March 28th, there's going to be an adaptation of Walt Whitman's Song of Myself. Harvey's kind of created a poetry series, but it takes lots of forms. It's not just poetry readings, but there are actors portraying poets. There's, you know, C.S. Lewis. This guy does a one-man show on C.S. Lewis. There's the poet laureate of Lancaster, Chris Longenecker, not long ago. Did a nice performance with a group of singers on the work of Robert Frost. And this is one of my favorite actresses, Jane Ridley, and Brian Humphrey, her friend, who are doing a two-person piece they created based on a Walt Whitman Song of Myself. So again, there's just a whole bunch of stuff happening.
Family Fun Fest this month?
You betcha. In March, we have two things coming up.
Nice.
Yes, indeed. On March 9th is the Pushcart Players, Cuentos del Arbo, that bilingual musical I talked to you about. And the Pushcart Players are like New Jersey's premier touring company for young audiences. It's a great piece with folktales from Spain, Mexico, Puerto Rico.
Excellent.
Nice dancing, singing, very cool. And then on March 23rd, talking about movies, we're doing one, the Global Kids Animated Short Film Festival, where the kids, again, will vote on the winning film. And we'll give some award to the winning artist as well.
Fam Fun Fest events all start at 11 a.m.
But of course, come at 10, because then the doors open and the activities begin. And there's always, not only do you get to do an activity, we always give you a little program with a take-home activity so you can extend the experience back when you return to your house. And we usually try to find a little free snack and a little toy treat for the kids as well.
That's great. Great stuff here at the Ware Center. Millersville.edu/MUArts to find out all that's happening at the Ware Center and the Winter Center over on Millersville campus. Thanks, Barry.
Thank you, Jason. Thanks for all the great work you're doing.
In April of 2009, we launched a house concert series here in Lancaster called Woodstove House Concerts. By the end of that year, we had produced two concerts featuring local musicians Jessica Smucker, Jeff Bryson, and Indian Summer Jars. The concert series was gaining momentum, and we were very fortunate to have Jason Wilbur join us for a show in late January 2010. Jason is a singer and songwriter in his own right, but is most known as the longtime lead guitarist for John Prine and Iris DeMent. It was a great opportunity to put our concert series on the map. A few weeks before that concert, my friend Russell Frost and I were chatting about house concerts and podcasts. I had been listening to a lot of podcasts, and Russell was getting ready to launch his own show called What Drives Us, about hybrid and electric automobiles. He was also serving on the board of a brand new arts group in town called Creative Works of Lancaster. At some point in the conversation, Russell suggested that I interview the bands who perform at our concerts, particularly artists like Jason Wilbur, and publish the interviews as a new podcast for Creative Works. Unsure of how that would all work and whether or not I really wanted to take on that commitment, I decided to capture the interview with Jason Wilbur before the January house concert, just in case. Over the 6 weeks that followed, I decided to try my hand at putting together an episode using the Jason Wilbur interview and an interview with my friend Ryan Kaufman, a jazz sax player from here in Lancaster. I set up an account on Podomatic, a podcast publishing website, and Around the Woodstove was born on March 5th, 2010. While I didn't formally collaborate with Creative Works at that time, we have partnered on several projects since then, and I consider their support and encouragement over the years a critical part of the success we've enjoyed. For that first year or so, I published the show whenever I had time or was inspired to conduct an interview with a traveling musician. The format was pretty simple. Each episode, except the first one, of course, was dedicated to a single guest or pair of guests from the same organization. Musicians, and most of the episodes were with musicians, would have songs from their CDs mixed into the interviews. As the show evolved, I focused more and more on showcasing our guests' latest albums. The idea was to keep the shows timeless so they could be rebroadcast at a later date and so the artists could come back whenever they released a new album. With the help of my good buddy Charlie Silvestri, host of a podcast and radio program based in Philadelphia called Up Close and Acoustic, Around the Woodstove was rebroadcast for several months in 2011 on WCHE in Westchester and WBZH in Pottstown, two local AM radio stations in the Philadelphia region. Suddenly, I was producing a show every week and at a very consistent length. The busier I became with other things, the harder it was to keep up that schedule, so I dropped the radio rebroadcast, but did my best to keep up with the weekly episodes. Until the end of 2011, the show remained focused on the single guest format, and the theme song was an old-time tune called Buck Dancer's Choice. My friend and fellow musician Jeff Sims introduced me to the song, and the two of us recorded a few versions to use for the show. 2012 began a new era for Around the Wood Stove. We overhauled the theme and the bumper music and added several elements to the format. The music beds now come from instrumental mixes of my own original songs and selections from a studio project called Jester's Longevity that Dave Bellard and I produced between 1998 and 2004. More recently, I've added a set of music beds contributed by New York songwriter and producer John Chin. The new format also includes the What's Happening Around the Wood Stove segment that showcases a handful of local arts-related events and the ongoing monthly segments that have been recently expanded even further with our latest roster of contributors. Mike McMonagle's Mickle Time takes a look at the local live music scene. Skirtin' the Curtain with Joanna Underhill is a summary of what's happening in the Lancaster theater scene. A Modern Look at Classic Albums is a discussion with F&M professor John Modern about some of his favorite old records. And our monthly Live at the Ware Center update is a chat with members of Millersville University Lancaster staff about events coming up at their premier visual and performing arts centers. We are very grateful to all of our contributors who take time out of their busy schedules to share their insights and news about the Lancaster arts scene. As we enter into our fourth year, the show continues to evolve, and we're constantly looking for ways to make it better. If you have any questions, comments, or feedback about the show, don't hesitate to drop me a line at jason@woodstovehouse.com. And of course, if you really like the show, join many other supporters of the program and drop a few bucks in the tip jar to help us do what we do. The tip jar is located in the top right corner of our website, woodstovehouse.com. A huge thank you to all who have helped us keep the show free. We love you. We really do. And now, without further ado, here's a trip back in time to March 5th, 2010. It's a little rough around the edges, but it's the seed that sparked the fire. Here's episode number one on this, the third anniversary of Around the Wood Stove. I'm Jason Mundock, and this is Around the Wood Stove. Our purpose is to encourage the arts, the ones that live in and around Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and also the arts from elsewhere that are the result of Lancaster or that Lancaster should simply know about. This is a first episode. We'll start with music in two parts. First, an interview with Lancaster area jazz saxophonist Ryan Kaufman. We'll talk about his CD, Three Little Words, which will be available at live shows and online starting in March 2010. In part two, a conversation with Jason Wilbur, a singer, songwriter, and guitarist who recently made a stop in Lancaster to perform at one of our Wood Stove House concerts. Well, joining me here at the Wood Stove House is jazz saxophonist Ryan Kaufman. Thanks for being here. The reason that I really wanted to talk to Ryan is because there's a brand new CD that's coming out. In fact, it's in production as we speak. If I'm not mistaken. So yes. when will it be? Let's just start with when will it be available?
I would expect it available by March, I hope. I'm kind of crossing my fingers.
March 2010. And Ryan's been playing jazz saxophone in the Lancaster area since the early part of the 2000s, and tell me a little bit about your experience here in Lancaster and how you got into playing professional jazz sax.
I think ever since I learned about improvising from my saxophone teacher when I was in, I don't know, junior high school or something like that, and that there were these kind of musicians who could just make up the music as we go, or that you could play what you felt, mm-hmm. I've been pretty fascinated with that concept. And I learned later on that there's a lot more to it than simply playing what you feel. And yet that is sort of the baseline that we all come back to. And we study and everything. It's just so that in the end you can be free and play what you feel.
So it's always been jazz. Jazz has been in your heart. And
well, yeah. And, for various other things, I mean, I would say I'm a musician first before I would just simply label myself a jazz musician. But jazz is definitely the type of thing that I feel most drawn to in my playing and in my writing, in my listening habits and everything. But I'll be doing, I'm doing a new music, like a new classical music series coming up in March. I did a classical recital last fall where I did a lot of standard and recent saxophone repertoire for saxophone and piano, stuff like that. So
let's talk about the CD. The new CD is called okay. Three Little Words. Again, soon to be available. Where was it recorded?
We recorded on December 14th up at a place called Schoolhouse Productions, and that's just outside of Reading, Pennsylvania. So about a 45 minute drive from here.
Who runs that studio?
I'm sorry. Yeah, the studio is owned and run by a fellow named Marty Mellinger. He's a very good pianist himself and a musician, and he has a studio there at the property where he owns. It's an old brick one-room schoolhouse that that's the name that he's renovated into a really state-of-the-art studio. He has a beautiful piano there that he maintains very meticulously, and so I heard about him from a reference from a friend, and I checked around a little bit and decided to go with him for this session, and I was really pleased.
Excellent. And so Marty was the engineer?
Marty was the engineer, yeah.
Who were the players?
I called some friends of mine from the area, from the central Pennsylvania area here, who I think are among some of the top musicians that you would find in our area, much less really anywhere. Steve Mishi joined us on bass, and there's a great pianist who was kind enough to join us from York. His name is Matt Homiller. And another friend of mine on drums, his name is Chris Lozer, also from York.
And these guys, are they guys you play with live?
Yeah, they are some of the guys that I would call for a live gig, although we talked a little bit earlier, too, about the live scene tends to be a little different as far as who might be on any particular night.
right. let's talk about the title track, because we're going to hear a clip of it soon.
This one turned up one day. I've been trying to work a lot more in the past year or so, and I need to continue to do some more work too on my piano skills in general and just on understanding piano harmony. So I was working on a tune. I was just studying this. It's a classic Cole Porter tune called "I Love You." And I'm not going to attempt to sing it right now because I have a cold, but the Cole Porter tune, "I Love You," and I started fooling around with the harmony to it, sort of stripped it down and then added a few twists of my own with the harmony, with the chords. Originally, I was thinking of, well, I'll do this arrangement of "I Love You," and it'll be this. Hopefully it'll be a hip arrangement of "I Love You." And it ended up sort of making enough left turns that I decided I'd just write a new melody on top of it, and we'll call it one of my tunes.
Gotcha.
Instead. And, you know, now that you ask that tends to be one of the main ways that I write pieces in general, is I tend to start with something that I'm sort of using as a template, either an older tune of mine or a study piece or a classic jazz standard or pop tune, and I might start tweaking it until it sort of becomes unrecognizable. But anyway, that's sort of the process that happened here with Three Little Words. And the band did a great job. I was wanting it to be this sort of just straight ahead, burning kind of up-tempo tune. And it was nice.
Let's talk about track 3 from the CD, Shenandoah. You had mentioned before Three Little Words that oftentimes you take older tunes and do arrangements and things like that. So tell us about Shenandoah.
It's pretty simple on this one. I mean, I've just always loved that tune. And I've heard various versions of it, anything from like an all-male a cappella choir version to, you know, a very stripped-down acoustic folksy kind of version or anything. But I just like the tune. I like the lyrics. And, yeah, it's something I've always enjoyed singing. And so I sat down at the piano a few years ago and started working through this and trying to figure out, well, how could I make this? Is there a way I could make this tune work in a jazz quartet context? Something that would be interesting for us to play because of the harmony, but would still sort of honor the melody and keep that front and center as far as its level of importance to the song. So, yeah, as we were talking about earlier too, I lived in the Shenandoah Valley for a period of about 5 years. That's where I met my wife. She grew up there, so it's an important geographic region for us in Virginia. Yeah. It's a beautiful area, especially in the fall, and we have a lot of family and really dear friends who live there now.
Spend some time down there then?
Yes.
Each year?
Yes.
Great. We're going to take a listen to a little bit of Shenandoah from Three Little Words, the upcoming CD from Ryan Kaufman. About the jazz scene in this area, the players, and by this area I don't really just mean specifically Lancaster, but I really mean kind of the whole central Pennsylvania area. What's your experience with the players in this area?
There is a wealth here in the central Pennsylvania area of just some really high level players, and players with a lot of experience and a lot of ability who play beautifully.
How much crossover is there with the big cities in the area, like Philadelphia or Baltimore? I mean, are there players who are from Central PA that spend a lot of time playing in Philly, or do Philly guys come out here? How does it work with the proximity to these larger cities in the jazz market?
There's a little of that going on, yeah. And there are a few, especially, you know, when you get to some of the guys who are at the pinnacle of the scene, who do get outside of the area quite regularly. I mean, one guy who probably most folks who follow the jazz scene around here would know of Tim Warfield, who's originally from York, Pennsylvania, and I think he still lives in York when he's off the road. But I mean, the guy's just a master saxophonist. I mean, he's amazing, and he would blush to hear me say that, but he's a really great player. He's played with everybody. He travels around the world, you know, playing his music and recording albums and everything. I mean, so he's someone who is a great example of some of the best playing that this area has to offer. And he does play around here fairly regularly too.
There's a great abundance of great jazz players. What about the rooms in relation to that?
I would say that the supply really outweighs the demand as far as the amount of players there are relative to the rooms where we can play. Mm-hmm. However, I think if you would ask some Philly guys about that, they would probably tell you the same exact thing. And I think in some respects, it's kind of the same everywhere. So I don't know that it's a problem that that is endemic to Lancaster per se or anything like that, but it does seem to be the state of affairs at the moment, yeah.
Is it enough for you as a performing, you know, live jazz saxophonist, is that enough to sustain you? I mean, I know you're a professional musician, but do you have to complement that?
No, yeah, when I was back in school, my teacher made it very clear to me that if I intended to do this full time, that I would need to combine several things to try to make a whole picture out of it. And he was definitely an example of that too. And I know other guys too, where, you know, we always have to combine things. So with me, when I went into graduate school for music, I started getting into the teaching scene in different fine arts centers, not-for-profit community arts centers, other schools, private schools, and just on my own too, with my own little studio. And so that has become largely my bread and butter as far as sort of monthly income. But fortunately for me, you know, I really enjoy it. I really enjoy working with the kids and helping them to do better in their band situation at school, or if they want to audition for, you know, district orchestras or all state or regional ensembles, or if they just want to be like first chair in their jazz band at school or something like that. And so I've been really having a good time with my students, just moving them forward and watching them grow. So that's an important part of what I do. Also, you know, my teacher urged me to learn the flute and clarinet, and you better do it quick because if someone calls you and says, hey, you know, we're doing West Side Story, can you do Reed 3? You have to be able to say yes, or you're not going to get that job. You
right.
know? So that, I don't do that full time. I don't do it very often, but I do get several calls a year to substitute or to come in and do different pit orchestra things for Broadway shows.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I should qualify that and say not on Broadway, but for Broadway type shows, musical theater.
Right. We have a beautiful theater here in Lancaster.
Yeah, the Fulton. I've played there many times, and also the Dutch Apple and some other theaters over in over closer to Harrisburg or Philly as well.
Let's talk about, let's go back to the CD and talk about track 5, which is called Who's Your Daddy?
Yeah.
Might want to qualify that. It's spelled Hoosier like Hoosier. What's the story behind? Like
H-O-O-S-I-E-R, yeah.
And not Who's Your. What's the story behind this track?
Yeah, that's just, I mean, that's an example. There's a couple levels to it. That's sort of an example of my kind of warped sense of humor, where the tune itself, I mean, the piece of music that I wrote itself started out kind of as an etude or a study piece that I was writing for myself over the chord sequence, the chord changes to a much older tune, a really old pop standard called Indiana. And so that's where the Hoosier reference comes from. And so I was writing this study piece over the changes to Indiana, and then I sort of started fooling around with that at the piano, and I thought, well, what if I put this, you know, what if instead of having the piano actually state the harmony, what if we just put sort of a vague sort of D minor thing under it, which you'll hear the bass and piano both playing that sort of an open fifth, which is, it gives you a D minor feel, but it's sort of ambiguous too. So what if I do that? And oh, I kind of like that. And so I was playing with it for a while. And this is sort of just reflecting a tradition of a lot of what jazz composers do. Not everyone does this, but there are certainly many, many examples of guys doing this, of writing a new melody over an existing tune. And so that's what happened with this tune, and I liked how it came out, and I had my own little Donna Lee reference kind of hidden in there too. Donna Lee is a famous Charlie Parker tune that was also written over the chord changes to Indiana.
There's a lot going on there.
Yeah, and it's, again, it's just kind of my little, there are a few layers of puns in the tune, but then also it has sort of this, a little bit of funky New Orleans kind of second line vibe that you'll hear Chris doing on the snare, and I get maybe that's the Who's Your Daddy kind of part to it as well.
So where can people find Ryan Kaufman playing live in the Lancaster area?
In the Lancaster area, I play at a few different places around here. There's a there's of course the Belvedere Inn on Queen and Lemon Streets. I play there. It usually works out to about once a month that I do get in there. Sometimes I miss a month, but. I'm in there. There's another room on Harrisburg Pike called Rosa Rosa Ristorante, and I'll be in there in the summertime. Other than that, I occasionally get in at a place called Prince Street Cafe, which is right downtown across from the Fulton.
Yeah, right.
I also play, I mean, this is just a smaller, interesting thing, but it's a nice thing. I do the first Saturday of every month, I play a jazz mass at St. James Episcopal Church. Ron Barnett is the pianist and mm-hmm. the music director there at that church, and so every first Saturday of the month we have a jazz setting of the Episcopal Mass, and I'm there doing that with him too. It's fun.
Did you see they just did a Bob Dylan Mass?
I saw that. Yeah, I heard about that.
Yeah, I wanted to go to that, but it was unfortunately a conflict. They're doing some interesting stuff over there. That's great. That's great to hear.
Yeah.
And so, where can people find out your schedule online?
If they go online, then you can look me up on MySpace. It's just MySpace/Ryan Kaufman Music, and I do have my itinerary there, okay. And you know, a bio and some photos.
Great.
Hopefully, I'm going to have tracks up soon from the album.
And the CD will be available, I'm sure, at all live shows.
Absolutely,
I would hope. And anywhere online at this point, or anything you're shooting for?
It will be on iTunes. I have to work out some details with that. But
excellent. So look for it starting sometime in March. Of 2010. Thanks so much for being here and doing this. I really appreciate it.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
All right, Ryan Kaufman, look for him in the Lancaster area playing jazz sax. So who is Jason Wilbur? Besides being a successful singer-songwriter in his own right, Jason has been playing lead guitar with John Prine for over a decade and a half. He's also played with other notable songwriters like Iris DeMent and Todd Snyder. And he hosts a weekly radio show in his hometown of Bloomington, Indiana. You can find him on the web at jasonwilber.net. That's JASONWILBER.net. And I recently found him in the studio about an hour before he performed at a Woodstove House concert here at the Woodstove House in January of this year. So joining me is Jason Wilbur. First of all, welcome to Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
Have you been to Lancaster, Pennsylvania before?
You know, I was thinking about that as I drove into Lancaster, and I'm not sure.
All right. Well, if you have been, then welcome back.
Thank you. It's a nice place to be.
Jason is in town tonight to perform at a Woodstove House concert, and a little bit about Woodstove House concerts, because this is a special night. This is the first one of 2010. And the Woodstove House Concert Series started in 2009, and we have a certain number of seats that we, you know, that we reserve or that we have available for reservation. Mm-hmm. And this is the first time that we've, quote-unquote, sold out.
Awesome.
Not only did we sell out, but we've had about as many inquiries to double the room.
Wow.
For tonight's performance.
Should we go over to Lowe's and just try to get some building materials quickly?
Just a tent in one of those big restaurant heaters.
One of those gazebo type things.
Sure, we could just move them out back.
Sure.
It'd be fine. So thank you so much for coming. We're very excited to have you.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, Jason's resume is sort of like a dream come true for the fan of the songwriter. Playing guitar for years and years with folks like John Prine, Amy Lou Harris, Todd Snyder, Lucinda Williams, Over the Rhine, the list goes on and on and on. But not just being a guitarist for these other songwriters. Jason's also a singer-songwriter himself and a recording artist, and also the host of a weekly radio show in Bloomington, Indiana. So my first question for Jason is, how do you balance all of that, and where do you find time to write and record your own music when you're out on the road with some of these other artists?
Well, I don't know. I just kind of make it work, you know. You just like anything else, you know, you just do what you need to do. And I guess one fortunate thing is, like, John Prine, who's, you know, really the main artist I work with, doesn't have a really hectic touring schedule, you know. Mm-hmm. So he'll maybe do 75-80 shows a year.
Okay.
So that leaves me a lot of time to either do my own shows or back up other singer-songwriters.
Right, and then you just find the time and write the songs. Now, let me ask you that: do you write on the road when you're out with other people?
Sometimes I probably write a little more at home, just because on the road, I don't know, for whatever reason, I'm rarely inspired to write when I'm on the road. I think just because it's kind of the grind of traveling and doing all the things you have to do every day to, you know, fulfill your obligations in terms of travel and sound check and feeding yourself and getting sleep and, you know, doing the show.
Right,
I mean, there's a lot to do. So I find when I'm have ideas for songs, it's usually more when I'm at home and there's a little more space for my mind to kind of relax.
Yeah. Now, over the years, at least, correct me if I'm wrong, but mm-hmm. 8 CDs total, 6 studio CDs, 2 live CDs. Is that right?
That's right, yeah.
And what's the process for putting together a CD? In other words, do you have a bank of songs that you've been sort of writing over the years and, oh, well, I'm going to, you know, backburner these and maybe they'll feel right later? Or do you write for an album?
No, pretty much the former. I tend to have a batch of songs, a batch of unrecorded songs at any given time, you know, usually there's, I don't know, a few dozen, but maybe only a dozen of them are ones I feel like are good. And the rest of them, either eventually I'm going to take out the good parts and turn them into something else,
right,
or I'm going to realize that I can just rework the whole thing and make it work, or I'm just going to trash it. You know? And some of those linger around for a long time, either because I haven't taken the time to really figure out what's going on with them, or I just keep thinking they're going to get better, you know, on their own or with age. I don't know. So it's sort of like I look at it as kind of I think that's part of the artistic process, you know, right, whether your medium is songwriting or whether it's sculpture or painting or writing. You know, you always kind of have little bits and pieces and things that are, you're not ready to just kill them. You know, you don't want to just throw them in the garbage.
Sure.
Because you've put something into them and you feel like they had some reason for coming about. So, but there are definitely ones that just kind of, you know, they never really rise to the top.
Right. But you know, maybe as an exercise, they serve some purpose to get you somewhere
Absolutely.
Else.
They might have been the thing that had to get out of the way for the next thing, you know.
So speaking of CDs, on your website, Jason Wilber, WILBER.net.
Thank you, yes.
You are offering a free CD if you just PayPal the shipping. Tell us about that.
That's just like a sampler CD. It has one song each from 5 of my CDs. And there's a special duet I did with John Prine on there. I think there might be one of the cuts might be a live cut. I haven't listened to it in a while. I need to remember what's on there. But it's just a way for people, because a lot of times people, like, you know, they just want a kind of a low
Yeah, yeah.
Entry point. They want to find out about your music, but maybe they don't want to buy a whole bunch of CDs right off the bat. Or so that's what I do. I have a sampler, and it's also something that sometimes I will give away to people. Like if people come to see me at a show or something,
right.
Usually
you have bag full of them, and you can just hand them out.
Yeah, that or I usually have a list where they can put their name and address. Like if they buy a CD at one of my shows, then I'll also send them this.
Got you.
You know.
Flowers don't grow unless she says they can. The sun won't rise until she waves her hand. Electricity is in her veins, and it pulls at me like that. When I walk right back.
But talking about live performances now, mm-hmm. because you're here for a house concert, and I was just curious about your house concert experience, what you think of them and how they compare to other venues, being someone who's played in probably every kind of venue that you can imagine.
Yeah, I've played everything from a house concert for 10 people to Carnegie Hall for several thousand people, you know, so... they are great in their, you know, for what they are. I think house concerts are really fun. It's a cool, intimate way for people to hear music. I think it's fun for the performers because it's a totally, well, not totally different experience, but it's a very different experience from doing a theater performance or a club performance.
Sure.
And a lot of times for an artist who maybe could go to a town and would have a hard time filling a venue that's 100 or 200 seats, or if they're going to play a venue that was maybe 50 seats, maybe the only thing that would be available to them would be someplace that wasn't really suitable.
Sure.
I think it's a great alternative. I mean, and I think it also is very much of the time we're in the sense that it's very much a do-it-yourself thing. You don't need to get sanctioned by anyone or have any kind of, you know, you just go, well, I'm going to have a bunch of people over to my house. I'm going to have some music and we're going to have fun.
Absolutely.
And, you know, that you don't have to get anybody's permission to do that, which is pretty cool.
I've heard some artists who've played at our shows and talked about other house concerts saying that there's almost an intimidation from an artist's perspective because you're literally 3 feet from the front row in most cases.
Yes.
And you've got 30 or 40 people in a living room.
Right. And it does, I don't feel that... I do remember, though, when I first started doing these, that was a little strange.
Yeah.
You know, because you're used to some sort of at least psychological barrier between you and the audience, whether it's an orchestra pit or even if you're playing at a bar, there's usually an area that's the stage and
assumed,
you're on.
Right.
You know, there's kind
the
of
the neutral
a,
zone, right?
But with a house concert, it really breaks that down. It's really just like everyone's together.
Yeah.
Know?
And I think, too, at a bar or in a club, and up,
mm-hmm.
There's an assumed, you know, green room backstage area. There's a place you can sort of escape
right.
to. Whereas at a house concert, you're really mingling, you know, with everybody.
Sure.
And with the exception of maybe a bedroom off.
Right. Yeah.
Off
sometimes you have
room.
A little space where you can tune up and
exactly.
warm up a little bit. Well, yeah, I think it's fun. I think it's a fun challenge to kind of push your comfort. I mean, I like that kind of thing. I like being challenged.
Sure.
You know, to expand my ideas and comfort zone. So for me, it's fun. I do know some artists find it really awkward and don't like it.
Well,
so,
I can
know,
see. I
everybody's
mean,
different.
Yeah, it's about as naked as you can be from that perspective. You know,
yeah,
in front of
yeah,
people,
it is. So. It can be.
Shifting gears slightly, tell us a little bit about In Search of a Song.
Okay, In Search of a Song is a radio show that I host. It's on our local community station in Bloomington, Indiana, WFHB, every Saturday at 4:00. And it's basically a show, I always enjoy talking about songwriting and art and the creative process with my friends who are musicians, you know. And at some point I was having a really great conversation with somebody a few years ago and I just thought, wow, this is really interesting. I wish I was taping it, you know. And then it's just somehow from that idea and that realization that sort of evolved that would be a fun radio show would be to have people I know, you know, or people I don't know, but who are fellow artists
sure.
talk about what they do and ideas about it and play some of their music. And so that's mm-hmm. what the show is. We talk about songs and songwriting and the creative process and where people come from musically. And they also either play some of their music live on the program or we play some cuts from their CDs or some combination of that, you know.
So. Is that something that we can hear as far away as Lancaster, PA?
Yeah, it is. If you go to insearchofasong.com, which is a little bit under construction right now, but there are some podcast versions of the show on there. And then if you ever wanted to tune in at Saturday at 4 o'clock, I think if you go to wfhb.org, you could actually hear the show as it's broadcast, you know. And it's always taped ahead of time because I'm always traveling on Saturday mm-hmm. playing music, you
right,
know.
Right.
But you could listen in real time as it's broadcast.
In relation to that, can you tell us about the Coal Country Music Compilation CD?
Oh, sure. Coal Country is the companion CD to a film, which is a documentary, and the film's called Coal Country. And the film is about... largely about mountaintop removal, coal mining, and coal power in general, and how it relates to the communities in West Virginia and other areas where they do a lot of what's called mountaintop removal, mm-hmm. coal mining, which is a really damaging form of strip mining. It's a really powerful film. It's definitely something everyone should see, and it's really surprising to find out exactly what's going on with, you know, what most of us consider to be a national resource, which is the Appalachian Mountains, you know, mm-hmm. even though a lot of that land is privately owned, I think it does have some, we do have some natural, national interest in preserving it.
Yeah.
And so the CD was just a companion piece to go along with that film to help raise awareness about the film and help raise some money for the 13 environmental organizations that have a coalition called the Alliance for Appalachia, and they're all working on stopping mountaintop removal coal mining, basically. So that's the Sierra Club and Heartwood, which is the organization that sponsored the CD, and a bunch of other really great environmental organizations.
Who's on the CD?
The CD, we have a really, wow, it's a pretty cool cast on the CD. Let me see. There's a really great track from this little-known band called the Cedar Hill Refugees, and that features Ralph Stanley on vocals, which is probably, if I had to pick a favorite, that's probably my favorite track. It's pretty amazing. But we also have Willie Nelson doing Bob Dylan's Blowin' in the Wind. John Prine is on there. Bonnie Raitt, Natalie Merchant. There's 18 tracks. So I'm
so mostly no names.
Right, you know, people... it's
up and comers,
cool.
Really.
Up and comers, yeah. It's a pretty cool project, and there are several people on there who would fall into that category of up and comer,
sure.
Or little known,
yeah.
You know, myself included. And so that's what that is, and hopefully it's doing its job of getting people aware of that issue. That's really the whole point of it.
Watch the wind in the locust trees, and the way the sun feels so warm on me and on you too, and everyone who has come to sit out in this lazy afternoon.
So one last thing to wrap up, I'll put you on the spot.
Okay.
Can you give me just a handful of Desert Island Discs?
Ooh, good question.
Three's fine.
Well,
okay, five. No, three.
Shoo, maybe this is really, really tough.
Nobody will hold you to this.
Okay, these are five with the knowledge that I'm not actually going to a desert island.
Right.
I would say Blood on the Tracks, Bob Dylan, Blood on the Tracks. I would say... one of the Pink Floyd albums that I listened to endlessly as a teenager, probably be Dark Side of the Moon. I'd probably say, this is kind of cheating a little bit, but I'd probably choose the John Prine compilation Great Days, which is a two CD set, which has a lot of his
good one, great good songs score there.
Yeah, yeah. It's, you know,
I you always go with a box set. Yeah. Like I go with the Floyd box set.
Gosh, geez, there's just so many in it, and it's always changing.
No, that's good.
Yeah, those would be three, but I'd be really sad on that island because I listen to those like crazy.
So in other words, you would rather just have one 120 gig iPod? Is that what you're saying?
Geez, I guess I would. Yeah, yeah. If those are the choices. Of course, where would I recharge it? Of course, where would I play the albums in the first place?
Good point. Well, thanks so much for being here and doing this.
Hey, thank you, Jason. My pleasure. Good luck with your podcast.
Thank you, and we really look forward to seeing you tonight at the Woodstove House Concert.
Look forward to doing it.
Around the Woodstove is a production of the Woodstove House with inspiration from the creative works of Lancaster. Our theme song is the old-time traditional tune Buck Dancer's Choice, performed by Jeff Sims and myself, Jason Mundock. Find us on the web at woodstovehouse.com.